You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with special guest Ty Windisch from the Step Back and the Whiteboard newsletter, and we're recapping the Heat's 121-118 loss to the Rockets on Thursday night. In a game where the Heat led in the second half by 21 points, it seemed like Miami might be on its way to back-to-back wins against the Warriors and the Rockets, but James Harden took over, finishing with 58 points, the most ever scored against the Heat. And unlike Wednesday versus the Warriors, the Heat just didn't have anyone step up in the final minutes. They did have a chance down three with 19 seconds left, but Dion Waiters rejected several passing opportunities, several wide-open teammates, and took a three-pointer that missed. Go figure. Harden grabbed the rebound. It was all over. Ty, I know it's a cliche question, but I sort of think it applies here. Did the Heat lose this game, or did Harden just go out and win it?
So I think it's a little bit of both. I think it looked like Harden was going to go out and win it, and he certainly – Harden went out and made it a game again. I mean, I was so impressed by the Heat's performance in, like, the second and third quarters, mostly the second, I think, because they really dominated. I mean, they played well defensively. They were shooting the ball well, everything else, and then – you could just feel Harden start to go on a run in the third quarter. He carried it into the fourth. And if he had stayed that hot, I would have said, you know, no, he won it. Like, there's no question. I mean, he was just unguardable. I mean, he got to the foul line. That's what he does. But also just made so many tough shots. But late in this game, I mean, he missed a lot of step-back threes in a row. And, you know, when those don't go in, they just look kind of ugly. I mean, it looked like he got a little bit gassed. And he definitely gave an opportunity for Miami to get involved again. And just unfortunate, like you said, that Waiters possession, one of a few different ones where the Heat could not take advantage.
I thought a big moment, too, was Derek Jones Jr. going down with what seemed like a ankle or some sort of leg injury. The Heat went to a 2-3 zone early and often, and they did that with the intentions of basically closing off driving lanes and passing lanes for Harden, and it worked early on. You mentioned their defense and how they got out to that second. In that second quarter, they outscored the Rockets 37-22, which was a big reason why they were able to open up a lead. But other than Harden, the Rockets didn't really have any consistent contributors. Austin Rivers hit a few three-pointers in the second half. Gary Clark ended up with 14 points. He hit 3 of 7 three-pointers, but that was really it. Chris Paul, like, he scored 14 points on 12 shots. He was not good tonight. Other than that, nobody else scored in double digits. Nobody scored anything close to what Harden did. Obviously, Harden, with his 58 points and 10 assists, accounted for more than half of Houston's points. I mean, it's insane. But the Heat got contributions from a lot of different places. Kelly Olynyk had 21 points. Goran Dragic had 21 points off the bench. But again, I want to go back to that Derek Jones Jr. injury, because he is the anchor of that 2-3 zone. And when he went down, I thought that was a really big thing for Houston, because all of a sudden Miami had to put Dion Waiters in there, who is okay but not great in the zone. And the same way as just a defender in general. So without Derek Jones Jr. in there, I just thought it opened up so many more things for Houston. And just that, if you give Harden even a little bit more space, even a little bit more wiggle room, he's going to take advantage. And I thought he did that. I know you like what you're seeing from Derek Jones Jr.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I like his capability offensively. I think he's shown he can shoot the ball a little bit. And just the fact that his arms are so ridiculously long, I mean, yeah, it makes him effective in the zone situations. It makes him a good rebounder. I mean, he had 2 offensive rebounds in 20 minutes and 5 total boards. I mean, that's solid numbers for a guy who's playing, you know, something like the 3 or the 4 and playing in that zone. But he's just a useful player, and it's one of those where a lot of teams probably wouldn't be able to figure out how to get use out of a guy like that, who's not – like, he's not overwhelmingly good, but there's bright spots to him, like the wingspan and everything else. But Spo just finding a way to make him a useful cog in this team is kind of indicative to me of how good Spo is.
Should also mention that Whiteside did not play for the second straight game. He was out with what is a hip strain, what they're calling a hip strain. He was active in this game. He was inactive against the Warriors, was active against Houston, but didn't play. Late scratch, something like that. Also, gave Eric Spoelstra, Miami's front office, Heat fans, the Miami Heat in general, a chance to see this Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk front court that started against the Warriors in that win, started tonight. Adebayo, 10 points, 5 assists, only had 3 rebounds in the game, but Miami was making a bunch of shots. And then Kelly Olynyk, he is playing better and better. And I, what I like, Ty, about this Olynyk and Adebayo front court, when you don't have that other center like Whiteside sort of just clogging up the middle, they start together. Adebayo goes to the bench, or I should say Olynyk goes to the bench early, and then it's Adebayo and Derek Jones Jr. Jones Jr. comes off, plays power forward off the bench, and then eventually Adebayo goes in. Olynyk gets a short break, but then comes back in at the five. And now you're allowing Olynyk to play at center next to a guy like Derek Jones Jr. Miami's offense is spaced out, and it's no coincidence, I don't think, that in the last couple of games, Miami's been shooting a whole lot better. I like this Olynyk-Adebayo front court. I don't think that there's a rush to bring Whiteside back.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, you look at this roster, and outside of the old guys like Dragic and Wade, I mean, it's a lot of young, athletic players. And, you know, if you add more to that mix, like Whiteside is, you know, he's not super unathletic, but he's not fast. He certainly doesn't move like Bam Adebayo does. And I just think when you have four to five guys who are going to run the floor, make plays that way, it just opens up so much. And I think, you know, it opens up a lot for Justice, especially as the point guard in those lineups. And just, I mean, that's just what we've seen in the NBA. Like, that's what works, right? I mean, you get long players who can switch defensively and run the floor and beat teams down if they get lazy in transition, which the Rockets certainly do. I mean, that you kind of play off your best player, and Harden can be a bit sluggish at times. It's just sort of his ethos, is he takes his time to get into stuff. I don't know. It's hard for me to look at this and not see a future where Whiteside just is not involved. I don't know if it's this season, if he can get healthy again, if they bring him back or not. But just going forward, I mean, the Adebayo and Olynyk front court, to me, is a lot better.
That's the future, and I think it's the future along with Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, too. Winslow, 19 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds in the game. Richardson, up and down game, ended up with 18 points, 4 rebounds, a couple assists, 3 steals in the game, had a couple of just flat-out free safety interceptions, jumping some passing lanes in that zone defense. But let's take a break here, and we'll take some of your Twitter questions after that. What's up, Heat fans? We've got a special announcement. We're going to be giving away a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to a lucky fan. All you have to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Take a screenshot of both and email it to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Once we get to 150 iTunes reviews and 1,500 followers on Twitter, we'll randomly select someone to send a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to. You get to decide the style and the size. Once we get to 150 and 1,500, we will cut off submissions, so get your submission in now for a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt. It could be yours for free. Let's go to Twitter to answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from Dog26533. Why is Goran Dragic not closing games over Dion Waiters? Ty, before you answer this, I want to read a text message that I got from David.
Ooh, okay.
The usual co-host. Yeah. He said, Jesus, is Goran fan-bleeping-tastic off the bench? I replied, should he start now? He said, no. I like the fit with Wade off ball, I think, but I got to go watch tonight's game. David, not on here today, not only because we wanted to have Ty on, because you're wonderful, but also because he was covering the Magic's win over the Warriors in Orlando. So he was unavailable. But in general, Goran Dragic didn't start. Dion Waiters got the start. Dragic obviously working back from that knee scope procedure he had, but wasn't in the game at the end there. If you needed a three, Dragic had made 3 of his 6 3-pointers in the game, had 21 points. He was playing really well. Waiters, not so much. I thought that was a little bit interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you look at it as, like, you can only have one point guard, Dragic or Winslow, then I see why he wasn't. But I just don't see why you have to look at it like that. I mean, you can put Dragic in there and have him play kind of an off-ball role. I mean, I don't have the
especially
numbers.
In that it's situational, right? Like, Waiters came in at the end of the game for 3-point shooting.
Yeah, and then you saw him just look off so many better options and take this class. I can't believe he only took 7 shots in 32 minutes, to be honest. But, no, I mean, I agree. I think Dragic should have been in there as your 2. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would hazard a guess that he's a just fine, if not exemplar, 3-point catch-and-shoot shooter. You know, I know he can pull up, but I'm sure he can catch and shoot as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's a guy. You know, you want to find ways to get your best players on the floor whenever you can without totally killing the fit, and I think it's not hard to decide in Dragic's there. It's not like you're losing a great defender in Dion Waiters.
He was What are the odds that you could give Dion Waiters the ball two nights in a row in potential game tying or game winning situations? Because I'm sure you saw the end of that Warriors game tie where Waiters had the ball, ended up passing to Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade obviously made that ridiculous shot. But Waiters, like, we were on this podcast saying, I don't know what's more amazing, Dwayne Wade making that ridiculous shot or Dion Waiters passing the ball in that situation. And to give Waiters the ball again, like, there was absolutely no way he was passing up this shot again. Like, there was no chance he was going to do that in two nights in a row, and that's exactly what happened. Ultimately, I didn't really mind the shot. I didn't think it was awful. Like, he did look off Justice Winslow, and both Rockets defenders crashed towards Winslow in that three-point corner, in that short corner. And he kind of just darted up, found this opening in the defense, darted up, turned around, and took a three. It wasn't as composed as you'd like. He did have a little bit more time left. He could have turned around, gone about it a little bit more slower, gathered his shot a little bit more. But overall, I don't know that there's a better shot there. But also, I don't know if Dion Waiters should have been the guy with the ball in his hands either. I kind of think that Dragic should have been in there. Let's kind of zoom out here. Dragic still coming off the bench. What do you think? Do you think that the Heat should start him, or is it just worth kind of having the consistency for these next 20 games? It doesn't really matter, especially with Dragic playing as well as he has off the bench.
I think I would start him over Waiters if Waiters is going to start for you. But then I guess on your bench, you have Waiters and Wade coming in, which is a lot to stomach. But just because you have a guy you can give the ball to and let make plays in Wade, especially this year where, I mean, the Heat going for a playoff spot, but I feel like almost more important is the D-Wade farewell tour at this point. Mm. So, you know, you let him come off the bench and do that stuff. But I think, like, Winslow, Dragic, Richardson, Olynyk, Adebayo, I think that's probably I don't know if it's the best, but I think that's probably the most fun and the most intriguing, in my opinion, lineup that Miami could roll out as starters, just because you get a player who's going to be a better decision maker, another creator on offense, and a very good catch and shooter in Dragic. And I think he's a fine defender too. And I think that they're just putting that guy next to Winslow doesn't seem like, I mean, it's weird. It's super weird for sure for those two guys to be one and two, I guess. But I mean, who cares? I think it would work.
Yeah, I'm with you. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Ultimately, I do think, you know what? I don't know. I'm sick of trying to guess what Eric Spoelstra is going to do with his lineups. It's unpredictable. Speaking of unpredictable lineups and rotations, that's our next question. Eddie writes in, the offense has looked good the last two games. What do you think the Heat's rotation will look like for the remainder of the season? Ty, the big difference is James Johnson not in. He's still dealing with some lingering injury issues. Derek Jones Jr. is playing a lot more now that he's healthy. We'll see we haven't heard anything as of recording this, the extent of that injury that he had in that second half. Hopefully it's not too bad because he had just gotten back from Miami. I kind of think this is where we're going, Ty. I do think I wouldn't be shocked if we maybe didn't even see James Johnson at all for the rest of the year, and if we got a lot less of even Hassan Whiteside.
I mean, it all depends. You know, there's franchises out there that they're going to make the right basketball decision no matter what. I think if the Heat are one of those franchises right now, that's what you should do. I mean, let the young guys play, let the guys who you see as future contributors play, and, you know, figure out what to do with Whiteside and Johnson in the summer. But there's some teams that feel like if guys have, you know, eight-figure contracts, that, hey, they're going to play. Our owners are paying that guy a lot of money. If the Heat are in more of a that situation, or if you know, they just really believe in those two guys, maybe they will come back and play big minutes again. But, like, you know, ideal world, we don't have to worry about owners or anything else or outside. And like, if it's 2K, I'm not playing Whiteside and Johnson anymore. I like what I have here. I'd rather run with this group and see what they can do. There's more energy, and I just think, you know, it's more fun to watch. I haven't watched a ton of Heat, but I see tweets all the time from Heat Twitter that just seem like very sick of everything. At least I did. And now there's the Warriors game was terrific. Obviously, this game was a lot of fun until the very end. And it's still fun, even though they lost.
Yeah.
I just think, like, this seems like a lot better basketball than whatever you poor people had to watch before.
It is way more fun, man. Like, it is just, like, with Olynyk and Adebayo, they just play faster. It's really, and it's not, I have his reputation as a Whiteside hater. And I actually think Whiteside's played awesome in the second half of the season. I think he's been great for the most part. It's just like, there's only a certain style that you could play with that guy. I do think that we'll see Whiteside again this year. I would honestly shut James Johnson down for the rest of the season. He's just been dealing with this the lingering issues of this sports hernia that he had at the beginning of the year. He wasn't even in at the beginning of the year. Derek Jones Jr. has completely outplayed him. But overall, I agree with you. This team is way more fun with this sort of lineup. And I'm honestly good if they don't win another game for the rest of the season after that Dwayne Wade three against the Warriors. Like, it doesn't matter anymore.
Do you think Wade's going to go for like 50 or 60 in his last game like Kobe did?
I think that shot against the Warriors was his 60-point Kobe game.
I think so too, but it sucks that, you know, there's like 20 games or whatever left.
What I'm holding on to for Dwayne Wade is the fact that he is very active on Instagram, so he'll never be completely out of my life. I'll just be like on my phone 24/7 wondering what Dwayne Wade is up to. And then we'll get his son Zaire
in
college somewhere, and that'll be fun too.
Imagine if he goes to the Heat.
Do you think I haven't imagined that? Like, that's literally all I daydream about.
He's good.
He is good. Shout out to American Heritage.
Hey.
It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
Ty, what do you got?
So I came into this game. Every time I watch a Heat game before I'm going to do Lockdown Heat, I develop a new player I stand for. Earlier in the season, it was Derek Jones Jr. This time around, it's Justice Winslow, who made three nice-looking three-pointers, 3 for 3 from deep on the game. He missed a couple of clutch free throws that a little bit dampened my basketball crush on him that I had that was growing strong, 7 and 8 for him overall. But 3 for 3 from deep, I didn't give him respect, his proper respect, as a three-point shooter after last year, even though his percentage was good, it didn't come on very high volume. I thought it was kind of fluky. His shot looks good. He steps into him well. He's shooting almost the same percentage on way more attempts. All of a sudden, I'm very interested in Justice Winslow, and that three-point shot, to me, opens up a lot of possibility for this, I think, 22-year-old going forward.
22 years old, has made 200 three-pointers this season, 200 three-pointers this year, 76 of 206. So that's like 37% this season. That's legit. And like you said, he's doing it more now off the dribble because he's the point guard. Like, he's kind of forced into that situation a lot. I think it's only going to get better. He's got all the skills. We know he's got the ball handling vision. He's a good passer. He's got a very quick first step. He's obviously big and physical, and he's got great defensive instincts and ability on that end. And we know that shooting, of all the attributes, you mentioned 2K, of all the sliders, that's the easiest one to move up over the course of a career, and it does seem like that's happening for Justice. My stat is also related to shooting, but it's a team-wide stat. The Heat were 15 of 28 from three-point range in this game, so no surprise that they were able to hang in with the three-point shooting Rockets. But they were also 18 of 40 against the Warriors. So that means that they were 33 of 68 from three-point range in these last two games, these last two nights. So that's 48.5% of their three-pointers that they made. That's insane. And it's also no wonder that if you make almost 49% of your threes, if you're making half of your three-pointers, Ty, and you've got two games against the Rockets and the Warriors, yeah, that makes sense that you would go to 1-1 against those two teams. Maybe at the end of the day, with how Houston's playing, the most threatening two teams in the Western Conference at this point. Like, this is why Miami has looked so good, and it is incredible how much different this team can look and how much different our conversations around the team could be just when their shot is falling.
Yeah, certainly, and it's sort of a reason why if they do end up keeping Johnson and Whiteside on the shelf, I mean, Miami is one game out of the eighth seed right now with very uninspiring teams between them and honestly with them in seven. Like, the Pistons aren't exactly blazing trails this season. I mean, as much as it may be better for this team to snag a nice little lottery pick, because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the Heat have their own pick this year, right?
They do, that's correct.
I mean, that would be nice, but this is not an organization that I think would ever really, really, truly tank. I mean, they were bad, but that's because a lot of the players they signed just haven't been that good. But this is certainly a Heat team where it would probably be a pretty bummer of a first-round series, either against Milwaukee or Toronto, both of which are just better. That's just how it is. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Heat, if they keep playing these kids, they're going to develop and they're going to be better. They're just better on the floor. I mean, if you play to within, God, what were they, -2 overall between the Warriors and the Rockets game? Mm-hmm. If you're that close to those two teams, I mean, you're blowing out the Wizards and the Hawks and some of these teams in the East. Yeah. They're going to play, I'm sure, on the rest of the way. I mean, they could accidentally end up in the playoffs trying to develop the young guys.
As somebody who hosts a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, and tell our listeners quickly what that is.
The Euro Step, spelled G-Y-R-O, the Euro Step, my new Bucks podcast.
One word answer. Are you worried, if
no,
at all, about the Heat in the first round?
Oh, no. I thought it was going to be – I didn't know what it was going to be. I'm not worried about any Eastern Conference team in any round, to be honest. Like, I don't think the Bucks will for sure go to the finals. I'm not saying that. But I think the Bucks have shown that they're good enough to beat anyone any night and most nights. So, I mean, I'm not super worried about like the Celtics later on in the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying I don't take the Celtics seriously as a threat. I'm just saying if you're the Bucks, me talking from the perspective of the Milwaukee Bucks, they don't have any reason to be worried about anyone. So, no, I certainly don't think they look down at the Heat and they're worried about that. I mean, like in the West, I think teams kind of have to look down and say, oh, who are we going to get in the first round? Like, they might be a little feisty, even for the Warriors and the Nuggets or whoever's in 1 and 2. I think the Bucks and the Raptors are like, yeah, we're not concerned. If the Nets hold 6 and no one drops below that, none of the top 6 teams right now, for whatever reason, drop, I think whoever's 7 and 8, you're like, yeah, okay, that's fine. This sub-500 team is not gonna knock us out and pull what we believe Warriors.
That was the longest one-word answer ever.
Oh, shit. No.
Ty Windish, you can read him over at the Step Back. Make sure you sign up to the Whiteboard newsletter. It's a really cool one. I'll have your Twitter account, Ty, in the show notes. So, listeners, just check that out, and you can find a link to signing up to that newsletter. It's a daily NBA newsletter. If any other words you want to say on that or anything else you got going on, we already plugged the podcast and all this stuff. But
no, I mean, you did a great job plugging everything sick that Wes has talked about. I share on my Twitter pretty often. There's links to it. Otherwise, just tweet at me and I can send you whatever you need. That's where you should go. And this is a great program. If you're not already subscribed to Lockdown Heat, you better subscribe right now.
We got a new logo and everything. We're making moves. That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat. Email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for jumping on, Ty.
Thank you.